Okay, so this is basically we have three items in the main, besides the first two, the preliminaries, and the last one, a closure. It's a briefing by the DMV on its annual performance plan and budget for 2022-23, and the responses to AXA report on the status of records review, and the briefing by the Castle Board on its annual performance plan and budget for 2022 and 2023. And then the minutes. We have three sets, one, two, three, four, five. We're not doing well. Sorts of minutes that we must deal with today. And then we close the meeting. So so we'll then start with the briefing by the Castle Board. Colleagues, let me just let me welcome all of you. It's 1 minute to 10 o'clock. Welcome all the colleagues to the meeting, especially those who are representing the entities that will be presenting today. Starting with the Deputy Minister, Honorable Thabang Makwetla, who is present in the meeting. Good morning, DM.
Honorable Chair, good morning. Honorable members, good morning.
Good morning, thank you so much. And so the entities that are presenting said to start with the CCP. I'm sure you received my message at DM that there was a request that we start with the CCP.
I will limit them.
Thank you so much, DM. I will limit them to 20 minutes. Calvin, CEO. We limit you to 20 minutes for your presentation. So you fly over the usual stuff and then deal with the new information that you want to submit.
Thank you.
Consideration by the team. So there is a board, and the board is led by its chairperson, General Mbuli. Once we are done, we then take discussions and then move to the next presentation. Having said that, Brian, are there any apologies?
Indeed, we have an apology from the Honourable Minister Thando Modise, who is attending a cabinet at the moment, but she will be joining us during the course of the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, no. Thank you. Thank you so much. And there is nothing from the side of the members?
We do not have any apologies, Chair.
No, thank you so much. DM, any message you want to convey and put to make, let me just give you that opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable members of the committee. Good morning. The accounting officers of the two entities are in the house this morning to present the annual plans for the financial year 2022-2023. And that is the Department of Military Veterans. The DG is here, and the Cape of Good Hope Castle CEO, Mr. Kilfile. Excuse me, Kilfile. They will take you through their plans chair and the oversight committee can then engage with the plans. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DM. Colleagues, without much ado, let me invite the board chair to lead us. He will then decide who he invites to take us through the presentation. Board chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members.
Is this your personal number or first number?
Chair, it's technology. It just gave me this number, this computer.
Okay, no, thank you so much. At least we now know that it's yourself.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, Deputy Ministers of Defense, officials, colleagues, thanks for the opportunity to present the CCB 2022-2023 Annual Performance Plan and the budget. The APP and the 10 million budget is of the COVID recovery plan to gradually get CCB performance back to pre-COVID levels. We are extremely grateful to the DoD for the relief funding over the past 2 years. And we do appreciate the 6 million allocation for this current financial year. We also appeal to the DoD that given the slow road to recovery, we still need support over the next MTF. Honorable Chair, the board continues its emphasis on good corporate governance and the clean administration as demonstrated by the last year's clean audit. Thanks for the committee on unwavering support. And I now hand over to the CEO of the Castle Control Board and the team to take us through our plans. Thank you. CEO.
Thank you so much. I'd just like to make sure to say that I'm alive and kicking, another robot presenting this this annual performance plan, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson Nkaba, honorable members of this esteemed Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, the Honorable Deputy Minister Sabang Makwetla, and the leadership of the Department of Military Veterans, and the ministry, the four officials, good morning. It is gloomy in Cape Town, but it is, the rain is most welcome, because only the day before the city was talking about we had a 2% drop in the dam level, so it's cold, but we appreciate the rain. Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start with, and I can't believe it's 10 years already, I remember in that very first, and I want to say, Chairperson, just before I continue, because I have these new earphones, and I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Yes, sir. No.
Thank you.
You have 20 minutes.
I will do it less than that. So I still remember that, and I see Ms. Achenbach is here, Advocate Mitchell is here, in that cramped, one of those cramped boardrooms of Parliament where we present, where I was, present, where I presented the first APP 13-14, and where the late stalwart Mr. Andrew Langeni was questioning me about what is this castle, because on the island they used to discuss, the Caribbean and colonialism and apartheid and union building, and he wanted to know what is this castle of Goodhope. And in that innocent question, he threw out the gauntlet.
The gauntlet was, how are you going to transform this erstwhile symbol of armed colonial conquest and apartheid into a symbol of nation building, healing, and inclusion? And so for me, this APP is not simply, as the chairperson said, a recovery APP, but it's also to reflect on many of the members who are no longer with us and those who are with us, whether we have made up, step up and take this castle of good hope through that transition. I don't want to use the word survive, but Denali Bully is my fourth CLOC chairperson, and we've lost one in between. The late General Mbata was my chairperson, was sort well. So the work that we present is very much in the memory of those who supported us, chairperson. So if we could slide my presentation, and I am allowed to share, isn't it? Let me slide the presentation. Bear with me for a moment. I'm just opening it. The computer is not that fast. And just indicate, chairperson, if you can see it, I will quickly squirt through it. Is it visible, chairperson?
Not yet.
No?
No.
Technology. Can I talk? I it's visible on my screen, and I press the share button. I'm not sure if I'm if I'm allowed to if I'm let in to share the presentation.
There it is.
Okay.
No. CFO, have we lost him? He's still on the platform. We have not. You are muted.
Oh, these things probably automatically happen. So can I run through it, Jefferson? If you see it, I see that I can move. Yeah.
Yes.
So slide number two is just the summary of what we try to recover. As you see, it's only 11 topics. It's almost an equal amount of slides. And I will take you through that. We've dealt with the introductions, so I'll move swiftly over to the second slide. This slide is perhaps summarizing my introduction, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And if you look at the top of the slide, the area that's shaded gray on my computer screen, it deals with the impact. What is the impact of our work? See, often people, come into the council and say, what are you doing? And we need to explain to them in one simple sentence what it means that we want to achieve over a longer period. What is the impact on the psyche and on the physicality of the people that we service? We can through the Accessible Center of Excellence. It showcases South African shared heritage. So it's not only about the national impact, it's also about the African impact and the global impact, chairperson. So when we report our, in our annual report, we normally report on what were the milestones that we achieved to give content and legs to the particular statement that we make here. All right, so with that in mind, I move over to the next slide. The next slide, the next two slides, I will summarize, but it's essentially the high-level items that through your minutes that you get out of this meeting and throughout our regular report back, and here I'm talking of both of the APP report back,
presentation of the annual plan and about the performance feedback when we report on how we achieved. So these are the items that's usually flagged. The general has spoken about item number one, and we already have a month of engagement with the auditor general chairperson. And so far, so good. We've run through 10 requests for information. So if the trend is continuing, we are on track to again achieve the clean audit. So we keep our fingers crossed. And since most of the things that the AG is pointing out is housekeeping matters, you have asked us in a previous presentation, but these interns that you use to deal with the administration, can you check them up and empower them? And we have done so. There are two staff members, female staff members, who are focusing on making sure that the files are in order, access to information, that all the documents are signed, etc. So we are happy with that. Then you're also talking about the maintenance, and I will deal with the maintenance B and D in one. We have since 2020 developed, with the funding support of the Department of Defense, an integrated conservation management plan. In fact, it's a very thick document that scopes all the work in terms of both heritage and intangible heritage that the castle has to fulfill if it wants to give content to its ambitions to reposition or to launch the castle as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. As you know, we are nestled between existing World Heritage Sites, Robben Island, and the Table Mountain, reserve. So it would be easy, but that is a discussion that we will take on at another level. But since it's flagged here as a research issue, as a BRR issue, we've put it on the agenda. If we can go to the next slide here. The other issue is the issue of personnel. And I know we've reported like a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, that we've lost three key personnel, the heritage manager, the tourism manager, and the events manager. Now, I took most of the marketing stuff over because Deputy Minister would know most of my professional life was in tourism and in marketing. So that's fine. And a middle management officer took over the maintenance so I think we have coped so far, but as you know, we have not optimally operated because of COVID. And as soon as we go through this transition into post-COVID, we will have a discussion with the ministry to reinstate at least one or one and a half of the posts that we have lost. We're in the service industry, and the service industry is about people serving people. So personnel and human resources is very important to us, and to ensure that we deliver on our global mandate that I highlighted in the second slide. Then the internal controls, I've spoken about that, about the two officials to be appointed to look at that, but we have had none. There was a request also from the minister's office to give us a breakdown of how do we pay our service providers. And there was one, I think it was Cape Town Tourism, and one or two regular contracts that we were over the 30-day limit, but for 98% of our service providers, we pay them within that 30-day limit. Then the last one is the issue of, I've spoken out about the audit challenges and what we do to do that in terms of, retaining our clean audit status. So the next slide, I present to you, Chairperson and Honourable Members and Deputy Minister, the budget. It is the one on my slide, it's shaded in a golden colour. And it boils down to, as the General Mbuli said, to a 10 million rand budget, of which we have already secured 6 million through the COVID relief transfer from the department. And last year, we have, even in a very sluggish COVID restricted environment. We have managed to self-generate 3 million, of which we, with the 5.5 that the DoD has allocated to us, we've managed to save just over 2 million. So if we take the, if we take the 6, if we take the 2, we have 8, and there is no way on earth that we will not be able to, at least for this year, even if it's very slow, even if we go into a first wave, we'll not be able to generate, self-generate 2 million to liquidate our 10 million rand budget. So I'm very happy and optimistic that we will be able to achieve that, Chairperson. The next slide gives you a breakdown of the individual programs. As you know, program number one is about clean governance and administration. And obviously, because we are service industry organization, most of it will go into salaries and wages, but we also have those other performance. So it's broken down into these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 KPIs. But it's mostly to do with clean administration. Are we submitting our annual performance plan in time? Are we submitting our draft annual, our annual report, our quarter report? So there, you know, there I don't think we are boiling. We are boiling. I don't think there's anybody in this room that can testify otherwise. Thank you, Chair. The next slide is program number two, which is maintenance and conservation. And I've spoken about the conservation management plan, the basis for our interventions. We have that 8 general police intervention. We have that 8-team regional works regiment unit, which consists of, and I may say, mainly female artisans, painters, plumbers, carpenters, and those type of labor, which is saving the state massive amount of money, because most of the labor, if you pull in private sector providers, the cost for the material is far less than the labor cost. So they're making a huge impact in terms of that. We also have the 6-person gardening team. Unfortunately, 3%, their contract has ended in the end of March. We've taken them on a month-to-month basis while we're negotiating with the NOG division to see whether we can put that contract out again for these gardening and maintenance services. So there are very little complaints in this area other than people, when they can't say anything about the castle, and I know the castle is 10 years superficial renovation. The only, when they can't point fingers to us and to our programs and to our progress, they point out to our squatters, and I quote, unquote, to our squatters at the corner of Darling, of Castle and Strand Street, as you view the castle from that side. We are in negotiations with, not negotiations, high-level talks with the city of Cape Town, because it's essentially their problem, because it's their land, and housing is their problem, but it's a societal problem. We take collective responsibility, so we're talking with them how we're dealing with that. Like, you know, under the lockdown regulations, no local authority could move or evict people. So there are currently ongoing discussions around that, and we reach out to those communities, which only sin is that they don't have a house. And in fact, when I go to the plans for the next month or so, I will talk a little bit about that. The next slide is program 3, which is actually the program that's under suit because of the sluggish recovery after COVID. And I've highlighted on my slide, this is a reddish color. I've highlighted those figures that we had to adjust radically. Because that figure, the annual target for the annual number of visitors should have been in the region of 220. So we cut it down severely, and maybe this is also too optimistic, but we rather give ourselves a stiff target and work around the limitations of COVID in the recovery, then to put that down to maybe 50. 3,000, and then when we do see a recovery, because we do see international visitors, and I mean I'm talking we do see the numbers coming back here. But I've mentioned already the budget, and that we have a 2 million surplus that we apply to Treasury, and I think we will be able to at least make 2 million plus to liquidate our budget. The other commercial events, shot here called the Women King. It's about women in East Africa who fought armed colonial conquest. I'm sure what's the Netflix or I don't know this movie industry when that film called. Since then we had another three movie shot at the castle. And although sometimes it does not to our normal tourism activities, the balance of the economic impact outweighs the discomfort that we sometimes have to explain. And through Facebook and our website, I do communicate to the industry if we have those temporary disruptions there. The last slide is that I'm the least worried about. When we make the castle, I call it the late Andrew Milangeni moment. How do we make people feel welcome at the castle? And many of my contemporaries say, oh, I don't want to set my foot in the castle, blah, blah, blah. But they come in the droves. And our strategy is not that they come only for visitation. They come here for book launches, for movie screenings, for seminars. Like on Freedom Day, we had all the formations of the former liberation movements talking about their experiences in SADC. It's in the light of this the attacks against foreigners, or the both verbal and physical attacks, and how we need to say that we all are human beings, and whilst we are legally in this country, we all enjoy those same human rights. So we had a discussion, a real experience from the APLA guys and the MK guys, how they were welcomed in the SADC environment, and how they have the responsibility to talk to the youngsters and to share that moment, because there's this big bridge between the memory, almost an immediate memory of 30 years ago, and the expectations of the youth today, especially if they're unemployed, no income, etc. So there's a lot of that happening. It brings a diverse, group of all demographic backgrounds to the castle. Then the next slide deals with the human resources. I've spoken about that. That's the superstructure. But I do think that we need just a discussion in the ministry, Deputy Chair and Honorable Deputy Minister and Chairperson, around the future of the CCB structure. I think we need to discuss. This is the structure that was developed by the Department of DIMS. It's a subunit in the DOD that looks at organizational setup. So this was the last structure that they developed, but I think it's time to review in the light of our experiences over the past couple of years. Slide number 10 deals with that's an upper programmatic update. So I've spoken about some of the things. This is just an update of the month that we're in, with two of them in the next month. So we in June, on June 16, we will be launching the book, the take-home book launch of the late freedom fighter Ibrahim in the castle. We will also be launching Gertrude Fester's memoirs in the learning. I think the Deputy Minister was also at the launch of the book of Tata Spethu Willie, Lutuli veteran. So there's a lot of interest around this, a lot of programmatic activities. It brings the old and the young, the new together to give context to that. to make the council inclusive and a place of reflection of memory. Likewise, if you look at the other programs with the Dutch Consul General, with the co-create program, especially setting up for the month of May. And then the point that I was raised about the homeless and the outside of the castle, the third bullet from the bottom, it's very small. There's a group of transgender workers, sex workers, living around the castle. They call themselves the sisters of the castle, the sisters of the castle. And we have, it was the end of May, we have a fashion parade in collaboration with a homeless movement in Holland, in Amsterdam, where we will have a fashion parade, international fashion parade with them and international people, where they, all the clothes were simply unique, and it's something that actually emanated from this very committee, one of the committee members who was in contact with them. So very exciting, and the variety, and for instance, we have the Nakba commemoration of 1949 conflict in the back corner. So it's a variety of activities that we are involved in. And then the last slide, Jefferson, is thank you for this opportunity to again present with you. I hope I've stayed within my time. And again, thank you for the support. A lot of the ideas that we implement is, in fact, you unknowingly or knowingly, Jefferson, plant that seed. And then we look at the possibilities of connect. And the comment about the sisters of the castle, that emerges from discussions out of this instead of evicting these people, bring them into the programs of the castle, and, you know, from kings and presidents to the people homeless on the street, that they feel that this is a place where they can feel safe to talk their talk, to speak up their minds, and to, you know, to reflect. Not in a glossy way, but in a deep, meaningful way about our common humanity. Thank you for that, Jason.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Delivered without within the time prescribed. Colleagues, we're now opening the item for discussion. I'm welcoming all the members of the board who are present in the meeting. Colleagues, over to you. Unfortunately, I am still suffering from the problem of not being able to see who raises a hand. Please shout, colleagues. Let me just take the names of first. Who comes in first?
Shalem.
Okay, I will have Shalembe, and then who else? And Shalembe, who else? All right. So Shalembe, Bob Shalembe, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the good presentation, as always, from the CCB. Chairperson, I don't have much, because I can see that they are trying their best. I can see also, I mean, the needs in terms of finance to efficiently run that entity. Chairperson, I mean, what I like the most there, I mean, is that Operation Clean Audit. I'm excited, you know, to see, I mean, that ambition to see the department getting what is of great importance, especially to the tax payers. But I just want to know, because, I mean, he has said that a program seems to be, will be run by the two staff members. I'm checking what do they have the necessary skills or capacity to obtain that clean audit? Just to see, how efficient they are, because to say you have two staff members, but I don't know when it comes to the capacity and also, the skills required. I have a concern. Yes, you're saying they were able, to run the department with in the absence of the 10 staff members that were lost, within the department. You know, and he is saying that he is thinking of reviewing the structure because they are able to do without, the 10 or the people that have left, the entity. If maybe he can give me the highlights, just, where about these people? They just left, or they left because of greener pastures? Because if they, it is not that they had other jobs, it means they are sitting at home. You know, having 10 people losing their jobs, it's minus food on the table for those families who were benefiting from the 10 people. So I'm just checking now. I understand, departments may see it a necessity, to prune down the budget, especially on the staff, a structure. But for someone on the ground to see that the department, the entity is now saying, no, it's fine, we can do without, those people. Which is good in terms of saving. I would appreciate maybe just the clarity, what were the reasons for them to leave? I didn't get well there. And Chairperson, I don't think, there's much that one, I may ask, because, the presentation, is clear. Let's see if maybe the department, the DOD, will be able to assist them where, they are in need, as they have mentioned, that they need something so that they can efficiently run, that department. The last one, Chairperson, the issue of those, I don't know whether it's informal settlement or people, making, residents on the streets or wherever. I'm checking on the issue of the bylaws. What is happening in the municipality? Because one day you'll see, these people making some small shacks in front of the shops, even in town, to say, we do not have place, to live. Right now, Chairperson, even if you go, to Akasha Park, you will see now, the shacks, even on the wall, someone can just throw the stone inside and you will never see wood coming through the stone inside. We have a situation like where what happens in Parliament because of the people that are staying around and not know what they are doing there. I'm worried, Chairperson. I think maybe we need, a strong discussion on that. We cannot just say because people do not have, accommodation and they must go and stay wherever they are. We are risking, a lot of things in the country. Because now, as I'm saying now, even where the members of parliament, that's, that's the national key point. But you will find the people now are getting in. The next thing now, they'll come inside for water. The next thing, they will do some shops there. But I'm just referring now to the Castle Control Board. What are the discussions with the municipality to ensure, such things do not continue? We understand the issue that people are homeless, but we cannot, solve, the problem with the problem. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well said. CFO, that was the only comment. I agree with him.
Chair, if you end up.
Okay.
Chair, it's my hand. I'm sorry you called for.
All right. Let me just check. How many hands are up before? Is this the only hand? At least you can see on your side.
Yeah, I think it's the only hand, Chair.
That's the only hand. Okay. Over to you, sir. My apologies to you.
All right. No. Thanks, Chair, and good morning to everyone on the platform. Chair, firstly, let's appreciate the presentation and the enthusiasm from the CEO and the team in terms of them trying to actually take the castle into greater heights. That is appreciated. My question, I think, will be around in line with what the Honorable Shelembe has raised around the staffing. Because we understand that during COVID, you experienced challenges. We sympathized with you during that period. But in the midst of the country's unemployment rate, I don't think it will be a wise move to necessarily bombard some of the staff with responsibilities as opposed to ensuring that the vacancies are filled and you intensify capability of the castle so that it remains a prize to all of us. Not that there's anything wrong. I know that you are punching way above your weight to ensure that things go well in the castle. But I think it will be necessary after the
Chabo?
Yes.
No, you're back. You were fading away. I'm happy you're back. Okay.
All right. Sure. No, it's fine. Thanks, Chair. I'll just wrap up and say what will be their plan. As much as they want to review their structure, will that mean that there will be no need for filling of those critical vacancies that they have indicated? What will be their plan if there will still be a need to fill those particular vacancies? By when will they? Are they intending to do so? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutle. CFO, I was actually saying I agree with the colleagues that your presentation was very clear and straight to the point, and we share, we support you in your work. And that the resources you have remain you allocated to you remain an issue, but that would be part of the discussions between ourselves and the Department of Education. All right, with that, let me ask you to deal with the.
Yeah. Thank you. Honorable Shelembe and Humutle, through you, Chairperson, may I respond as that the Department of Education, Department of Defense, Chairperson. The issue of the capacity in the CFO office is not that much of a problem. We have a fully qualified CFO, Malblanke, who is under CFO, who has a bookkeeper / financial manager, and we fully in.
Sorry, CEO. I don't know whether you reshuffle papers, but there's this voice that keeps during your presentation.
No.
That comes with reshuffling of papers or shift something on the desk.
Yeah, it could be the earphones. I will take it off. It could be the earphones.
Better?
Yes, much better.
Okay. Thank you. It's the earphones. So I was saying through you to Honorable Shelembe and Mumutle, thanks for those questions and I appreciate it. I will deal with them quickly. The first one around the capacity in the CFO's office to deal with both the fundamental work of oversight and financial oversight and good financial management and sound corporate governance was not the issue. Because he is fully qualified, Mr. Manglang Gewu, he is on the platform. Then he's got a financial manager / bookkeeper, which is also
if he's not fully qualified, experienced. And then this committee raised the issue of the two interns that we were using. Both of them were qualified, the one in public administration and the other one in financial management. And the two of them makes up four, the four of them have a very clear plan to deal with what the Auditor General mainly pointed out as big bookkeeping matters in a small organization. So they're sufficient. It was a matter of empowering those two younger female colleagues to deal with the filing system, both virtual filing and physical filing. So that's been sorted, Chairperson. Then through you again to Honorable Chilembe, it's not 10 staff members that we've lost, it was three. And the three was at, like at middle management level. And we were saying that the first one, as husband got a position, he was working for the Denel, the international arm of Denel, and he's got a placement in Austria. So they packed up in house to Austria. That was the first, that was the marketing manager. The heritage manager took up a better position as the Musenberg Arts and Craft, the Musenberg Arts and Craft center that they have in the tourism center. He took that over as the manager. And the last one I've reported is the unfortunate one who departed. We departed on, and the case is in a sense sub judice, we departed under unfortunate circumstances from the organization. So it's not, there were very particular reasons. And when COVID hit, we started the process to re-employ, but when COVID hit, we just put everything on hold as per our discussions with the ministry. So that clarifies that, Honorable Chilembe, through you. Then the issue of the informal sectors, we've met with the councillor responsible for this. And apparently there was a high court order prohibiting the city to apply the bylaw because it was in contravention of both the regulations and in contravention of the constitution. But I think since the state of disaster is now, you know, almost completely lifted, I think they were pursuing to move either people in shelters or whatever. And I agree with you. International visitors come from the N2 and they drive into the hotels and they look at the oldest surviving building in the country. And when they look to their left, they see, fires next to the walls and people semi-nude, etc. So there is a high level responsibility. I know that when we our safety committee and council consists of the military and the legal, the military police and the Rexatu, etc., wanted to implement a high-handed approach. They just wanted to evict the people. And I told them, you can't just evict people. Even if you say, but they are not in a structure, they're not in a home, you can't, in terms of some of the bylaws, in terms of the constitution, in terms of the High Court ruling. So it is a very contentious and tedious issue, but it is handled. That's all that I can say. I don't know what is the next move, but I know it is handled. I know that the council told us that they will reapply to the High Court, but that is it. In the meantime, if we are true to our principles, to our statement that I made at the beginning, we cannot ignore these people away. It's our, I mean, these people of the city. And we need to take, as I say, collective responsibility and in the meantime have programs that are encouraging them to cause both the visual and aesthetic and physical damage. But to say you are here, how do we deal with that? I know there are also NGOs that's engaging them. And our discussions to get the fence up, and the Tenderloin Police aware of that, is also moving. We know that with the last renovation, DPW missed the deadline to submit that for the fence, but we are aware that we will only move the problem up over the standstill. We are totally aware of that. It's a matter. I appreciate the committee is also taking it very, very seriously. So, Honorable Mutle, I hope I've also answered you. So it's not that we've put like 10 people on the street and that they are unemployed and homeless now. And we have a plan to at least get two of those posts refilled. But we hope that by the next engagement with you, we could say, if positively we have, you know, employed at least two of those vacancies. Thank you very much. I hope I have covered the questions through your chairperson.
Thank you very much. You've done very well. Colleagues, let's thank the CCP you know, for their presentation this afternoon. We certainly support the budget. I didn't hear anything to the contrary. So we will then table our report to Parliament accordingly. On those basis, we thank you very much, and you can then recuse yourself at any time when you want to. So you are free to do so.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. General Siyabonga.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues, we now can then move to the next item, is the presentation by the DMV. I don't know how much time they need, but my intention is to say the time now is 10 to 11. So can they do it until 11:30? That gives them a full 40 minutes. Okay, over to you, DMV. I don't know who in the DMV is going to take us through. Understand the Director General is in the meeting. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning to the Chairperson and good morning to the members. The presentation, indeed, we are hoping that our principals are also in the meeting. And I think also to ensure that the presentation is done faster, we'll be able also to look at the matters that are pertaining to this meeting. It's also important to person for the department to raise the discomfort that keeps on coming up in terms of the work of the department not being known by the deputy minister. And the APP chairperson is done in a formula of government where we have set plans and we sit with our principals and we present to them what we are going to put in our annual performance plan. And that process has happened at the DMZ. And we had a two-day set plan. We were requested to make two more days to panel beat and ensure that the APP is in line with the program of action of government. I said it's important that I raise the matter before we even present, because if we don't have concurrence with our principals to present and they don't know the information, we might have serious challenges. And I just wanted to clear that part to say all the processes of government to ensure that our principals are aware of the APP has been addressed in terms of the government protocols, and the Deputy Minister and the Minister have signed our APP. We presented to the Ministry before we came here, and the Minister indicated that she would like to have a day or two whereby we talk about the implementation plans and the projects so that they can ensure that the money is aligned to the departmental projects, and also to talk about the policies that the department has finalized already and where there's areas that they want to do incremental addressing the policies. It is also a matter that will be done in that two-day workshop. I think it's important that we are able to be assisted in this area. As this matter keeps on coming up, we had a meeting at the Office of the Deputy President, and the matter came up that the department is working behind its principals. And us as management, we felt very uncomfortable about the situation and about the presentation. We could not speak for ourselves in that meeting, but we are pleading to the committee chair to assist us in ensuring that what we come to present here, it is knowledgeable in terms of our principals. And we have done exactly that. And we have also followed the 2020-2025 strategic planning document of the department, which was approved and signed by our principals. I would like to say our principals are fully aware, and the portfolio committee is fully aware of the work of the department. The department doesn't have a process that is working behind the ministry. I said, let me clear that before we even present, so that there's no discomfort coming later on after we have presented. As I've also said, that there was a research analysis of this work, and we were all in the meeting. The Deputy Minister was in the meeting where the research analysts were talking to our APP, highlighting certain areas of strength and highlighting certain areas of weaknesses. I thank you, Chairperson. I will await the Chairperson to give guidance for us to proceed.
Yes, proceed, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mr. Siango, can we take the committee through our annual performance plan 2022-2023?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to members of the portfolio committee, Deputy Minister, PG, and also colleagues in the meeting. I will try and stick to the timelines given, Chair. I will focus on key areas in the document. With the slides about the, I think it's something slides, but I will, we've provided this comprehensive information in the slides, but I will just try and summarize the slides. I will skip the slides on the mandate because this, I think it's well known within the portfolio committee. However, where I want to emphasize here is that in terms of the policies as indicated for this year, for 2022-23, we had indicated that we've been urged to actually finalize the policies, especially on the pension and the subsidized public transport. I must indicate that the pension policy has been endorsed in that process of the presidential task team for approval. So that should be signed off very soon. And we are going to focus now our energies in terms of the subsidized public transport policy and also the mechanism in terms of how that benefit should be rolled out to military veterans. I thought I should just emphasize that. And furthermore, when I then come to the strategic focus of the department, I'll also try and move fast here because it just talks to the mission vision and also values of the department. But however, here there's areas where I want to focus on where I think we are indicating the challenges in the department and how we are going to mitigate against those challenges. There's quite a number of challenges, as the portfolio committee chair is aware, in the department. And we have indicated how we are going to mitigate, you know, in those. And you would see that in some of these areas, in the narrative of the APP, and also in the commitments made by the minister and the deputy minister in their foreword, some of these there are some of these mitigation steps that were taken as a department, particularly on the amendment of the bill, also on the finalization of the reorganizational structure, and also in terms of you know, ensuring that we decentralize the services of the department to where the military veterans are. So I think these are some of the mitigation factors that we've included, and also I think one of the important one is the one of ensuring that the department participates or is entrenched in the district development model, which means it's basically offering services where the and also one of the enablers, chair members in the department, I think when the portfolio committee did the site visit here, we had indicated that we have a challenge in the department in terms of paper or manual processes and also working in silos in the various sections. One of the areas that we felt that it's important that we finalize in the department is the automation of the department, that is the development, investment in the ICT infrastructure and the development of the integrated database management system. And we have put a timeline for that to say by October, the development of the various modules should be complete, with an expectation that that by end of the calendar year, which is December, that this system then should really be fully functional and be able be accessible to military veterans, and also be centralized to provincial coordinators, so that they are able, they do not necessarily have to rely on the head office for services. They can, in their own offices in the provinces, be able to access the get a sense of progress in terms of where the military veterans applications or benefit status are. And also we've indicated here in the documents one of the areas or the interventions that is helping the department to fast track or improve the disbursement of the benefits is the intervention by the presidency, which is a presidential task team through the work streams. And I think, Chair, I need to report that I think we've seen really positive outcomes, especially around the intervention in the pension benefits, where we saw the various stakeholders coming together and ensuring that we put together a proposal that was acceptable to the principals in terms of finally, for implementation to military veterans. Then, of course, one of the challenges again is around HR, where we still have a challenge. I think also this has also been flagged by AG around vacancies in the critical posts in the department, especially at strategic level. I think it's one of the issues that now, with the appointment of the new director HR in January, we are attempting to resolve. We know that the two DDG posts, corporate services and socioeconomic support services, they were advertised, and a master list has been concluded to be sent to the ministry for shortlisting and interviews. And then other posts, I think there's two other chief director posts which are currently being shortlisted, and we have recently just advertised the director legal services. Unfortunately, the new director services who was asked from January resigned and left end of March. So we now need to appoint again for legal services. I've spoken to the database issues, and one of the again challenges in the department has been communications. In terms of the challenges, in terms of the achievements in the department, and also in terms of ensuring that we inform military veterans on all the issues. Here, we are committing that as a department for this year, we are going to be developing a communication strategy that will ensure that information is, we adopt a proactive communication and engagement strategy. And we've seen lately, Chair, that through the executive authority, the minister and the deputy minister, the imbizos that have been going on around the country, and also through the deputy president's office, in terms of going around the country to talk to military veterans on issues related to this. And then, and also, I think one of the issues that has been largely raised here in the portfolio committee is the issue that we needed to respond to around healthcare services, that is improving access to healthcare services. We have indicated that in our APP to say we are going to be looking at ways in terms of how we are going to be improving access to healthcare for military veterans. We know that for now we are using the SAMHS services, but then we have been on a number of times been requested to look at other alternatives so that military veterans are able to have comprehensive access to healthcare services. So then when we talk then in terms of the key priorities for the year for the department, we've got about 14 here, which I will not go through line by line to person and members, but I think I will just take maybe just two or three of these. We, for over a number of years, we have indicated the department has obtained an unqualified audit. And what we are saying here is that we want to improve that to a clean audit. Hence, then we are in the process of, as such, we have been in the process of capacitating the internal audit function in the department to assist the department to get to that stage. And also the issue of decentralizing of services, we are really trying to improve in terms of both capacitating the provincial offices and also in terms of investing in the ICT infrastructure, and also there's investing in just automation in the department so that we don't necessarily rely on the head office to you know, for most of the administrative things. We are able to do these things online. And I've indicated the issue of the intended expansion of the medical benefits to dependents, which is going to also be forming part of the amendment of the bill. And I've also spoken to the issue of the finalization of the public subsidized public transport policy for so that we can were able then to roll out that particular benefit. And Chair, I've also spoken, I think it's bullet number 10, to the finalization of the organizational redesign. I think these are the key issues, Chair, that we are saying to the department we need to focus on so that we are able to have an effective department. And also we have been in discussion, Chair and members, with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And we've really had challenges around that area in terms of getting us a new complex for the department. There is a complex in Hatfield that we've identified with together with Public Works. But now the administrative processes on the side of Public Works have really been frustrating the department, where it's been going back and forth between themselves in their big committees and National Treasury. So I think we have really been trying to put pressure on them to actually finalize the process so that we're able then to move out of this building to a more conducive building, so that we're able then to offer better services. And then I will turn then and move to the issues of budget that is going to support all the work that I've spoken to. At a very high level, Chair, is that the department's budget for 2022-23 is going to be 666 million, which is going to increase to 692 million over the medium-term period. Program 2 and Program 3, which are the main service delivery branches, are the ones that have most of the budget, about 80% of the budget. This is where then the benefits are lying, where Program 2 is the one with the largest slice of the budget, with 57% of the budget, because I think 8 of the benefits are sitting in that particular program. So so that's the budget for the department. I will skip through the tables. It was just tables to indicate that how then the budget has been spread out over the medium term, as indicated for this year, it's 756 million. And then this is just a summary, as I indicated, in terms of the budget and how then it has been allocated to the three programs. Then when I then move to indicators, maybe I just want to focus on the most of the indicators in the department are similar indicators to what we've had in the past, but I want to focus on the new indicators that we have, which is, I think, deliberation, struggle history, research outputs, which was, I think, in 2019-20 APP, that indicator was there, but we never achieved it in that particular financial year. And the following year, it was discontinued due to challenges around that particular work or particular program. So it came back again in 21-22, where in the last financial year, we launched 6 books, part of which in the previous presentation by the Castle Control Board, I think one of the books that is going to be launched there by Gertrude Fester is one of the books that were actually launched as part of the cohort in this 2021-22 books, 6 books. So basically we've kind of put together a very good partnership with Human Science Research Council, where we're quite comfortable in terms of the targets that we have put there going forward. I think we are going to enhance that program because we feel it is an important program that we as a department must undertake to memorialize military veterans. It's a program that has got other elements in it other than just books. Then when I move then to program two, these are just some of the indicators. Then maybe I just need to focus on two of these because some of the indicators the portfolio committee is aware of. We have broken down the indicator on the database to include what the department does on a daily basis, which is the registering of military veterans who come in on a daily basis to register themselves into the database. And also we want, as part of our monitoring, to actually monitor the process, the verification process that is currently happening on the NSF members. So we've included an indicator around that work so that we're able then to get a sense in terms of how that work is unfolding. And then also the last indicator that we've added is something that we have always spent money on in the department, I think for some years, but we have never really reported on it in the APP, which is the number of military veterans approved for mortgage bond subsidy payer. So that one has also been brought in to the APP for this year, because we do spend money on this particular aspect. So we thought it's important that we also bring it forth and monitor it. Then when we move then to program three, these are just the enablers that talk to then how we're going to achieve these things that we are talking to. When we move then to program three, here in program three, I think I want to indicate that in the past, we've had nine memorial lectures per year, but due to the, you know, experiences and lessons learned, you know, in terms of those, and you know, the quality, you know, and the time taken to prepare memorial lectures and all those kinds of things, we've decided to reduce the memorial lectures to four for the year, so that we focus really on the quality, you know, of these memorial lectures. So because we have really learned lessons in terms of how this work has been undertaken in the past, and also with the advice also from the executive authority, I think we have settled for this four, which is going to be one per quarter, which is really going to be what we are committing to. And I think also in this program, chair and members, it's a program where we're saying we want to improve, ensure that, you know, we have repositioned kind of the skills development program, you know, by partnering with relevant partners and sitters, because what we want to achieve here, because as part of the skills development program, now as part of repositioning, we are providing tools of trade to military veterans, because we want to ensure that military veterans sustain themselves. If we are not able, as part of our work, to facilitate job creation and job placement for military veterans, the tools of trade must be able then to assist military veterans to do what they need to do, with the skills that have been provided for. And also the last one that talks to memorial sites, there's good work that has been happening with the Department of Arts and Culture. There is a very good program that has been put together, led by Department of Arts and Sports, Arts and Culture, where the department is participating on. I think it's one of the programs of the presidential task team. So in that work also, we do play a big role, and we anticipate that these three memorial sites should be possible when we work with them, especially now that there's a program that's been initiated through the presidential task team of repatriation of remains of fallen heroes from other countries. Then these are just some of the enablers that talk to program three. And then in terms of risk mitigation, these are the risks that have been identified. I must indicate, Chair and members, that we are really making progress on some of these risks. But on some of them, I think there are challenges still, especially on the issue I've stated before on the vacancy rate at strategic levels. We know that now we have a permanent DG, but we still have those critical vacancies at strategic level. But I think in this year, these risks, the mitigation, I think some of these things should be dealt with because now there is a real push to get, especially the amendment of the Act and also the finalization of the structure. So I think we are really trying to address and implement this mitigation. Then we here we thought we should just report on the statutory bodies that report to the department. We have three: appeal board, advisory council, and SANVA. And these are just their mandates. And I must indicate that advisory council term had ended. A new advisory council members were appointed. I think they had their first session with the ministry, I think last month or this month. SANVA is going to go to the conference now very soon. An appeal board, the advent for those members of the appeal board, because the previous appeals board term ended, the advent for the new appeals board is out. So soon we should have also a new appeal board members. Then, again, I've spoken to the issue of DGM, is that we need as a department to get closer to this DGM model, because I think it's going to help us to service military veterans where military veterans are staying. I think also with the advice again from the executive authority, when we met the executive authority, they've indicated some of the mechanisms that we can use in terms of ensuring that we play a big role in this DGM model. So in conclusion, Chair, these are just some of the critical success factors. I think I will just focus on two of these. To say that critical success factor for a high performance is a well-structured, staffed organization housed in good facilities with the best policies and systems, including ICT systems. And you would see that in my presentation, I really focused on these issues, Chair, to say part of what we're going to do this year is to do exactly focus on improving what or putting in place these critical success factors. And then of course with the intervention in the presidential task team, we are really hopeful that now it's going to bring government to support the departments, I mean provinces and municipalities, and also other national government departments to support the mandate of the Department of Military Veterans. I thank you, Chair. Chair, through your guidance, can I then move on to the next presentation? It's very going to be very shorter than this one.
Okay, sure, please. You proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then this one, Chair, talks to the issues raised by AG and how the department is dealing with those and the commitments that we have made as a department in this. This is also quite a long presentation, but I will focus on critical areas. And this is basically just a table of contents in terms of what is entailed in the presentation. However, if you look at what AG has indicated for the department over this cycle that they've been auditing, the department has really not moved in terms of all these areas, except, I mean, improved on all these areas indicated here, except to say that AG has raised quite serious concerns around financial management, and that is specifically around the equals of about 82 million that they've identified, which they are saying that it's a risk that those equals could mean that it's money that could be used for services in the department. Indeed, Chair and members, 82 million for a small budget of the Department of Military Veterans is quite a lot of money. So then, in just at a summary level, and then Chair, also I think around issues of financial management, the second issue that was raised by AG was on the issue of asset verification. Where the challenge is in that space, and maybe if and also I think something that has always been raised in the department on logis implementation, but fortunately with the logis implementation, the challenge there has always been the fact that we needed human resources to be able to assist to help us to implement that particular system, and with the new Director HR, he has suggested some options for the department in terms of being able to employ someone who's going to be able to drive the issue of logis implementation. So those are the, I think, three aspects that were raised around financial management, the areas of concern that were raised around financial management by AG. And around performance management, AG raised the issue, I think, which has always been raised by the portfolio committee, of underperformance by the departments. And also the second issue I think that AG has raised sharply is just inconsistency with the portfolio of evidence that we normally submit as a department to AG, and that supports the performance of the department. And Chair, I think that's the mitigating the effect of there is that for as long as the department is still operating in this paper environment or manual environment, we are still going to have that challenge. Fortunately, now that we are beginning to invest on ICT infrastructure, the issue of the performance management system is going to be quite important for the department to invest on, so that we are able to eliminate this issue that has always been raised on portfolio of evidence. Then on procurement and contract management, the critical issue that was raised there is that the department is still sitting on expired contracts. And fortunately, what we have done here is that we have managed to get rid of the one travel agency contract, which was, I think, biggest cost driver in the department. We have moved now into a more, into a contract that is legal, into a legal contract. In terms of travel for employees and stakeholders of the department. And the only contract that now we have put in place processes to get rid of is the telecoms contract, which talks to our landline telephones in the department. And so we are in the process of trying to rectify that contract. Then the issues of compliance management is the issue of consequence management with regards to irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. The DG has taken a step with regards to this. There is action that is underway currently with consequence management on certain officials around this particular aspect. So HR has spoken to it. AG raised the issue of vacancies in the department for longer periods, especially over 12 months on strategic level areas. Again, with the new director, HR has put in place a program and has also put in terms a project plan in terms of how then those posts must be filled. Then IT had a number of audit findings, especially around governance, security management, continuity, and disaster recovery. Some of those audit findings have been dealt with Chair and members. I think the only one that is still remaining is the issue of the disaster recovery plan, where now we have been engaging CETA to assist us to put together a program around that area. So it is work in progress, which is I think the only key and the outstanding one or main one that has been raised by AG, which is still outstanding on those findings that have been raised by AG. Then oversight and monitoring, the issue of filling of the under the oversight and monitoring, AG raised the issue of the vacancies in the audit committee members. I think we had vacancies there because I think some audit members contracted expired, and it raised concerns because in some meetings, then if then there's no quorum for audit committee members, then it becomes a problem in terms of addressing certain issues. So we know that through the executive authority, I saw an advert I think sometime this week or last week of audit committee members. So we're hoping then that we will address that particular point. So then, Chair, I want then to go quickly to the issues that we have then committed to deal with. I think there are five issues that we had committed to do, and I think they are being monitored on a quarterly basis by the portfolio committee, which is enforcement of consequence management. I think I've spoken enforcement of consequence management on all identified cases of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I've spoken to this case to say that I think the accounting officer has taken steps here, and the indication is that this is an ongoing kind of a process in terms of applying this. And then the issue that was also raised was the department must keep reliable and accurate assets, which was also linked to the issue of the asset verification, which also AG had raised. And I think also here, this is also largely linked to the implementation of the logging system. So we are really hoping that we know that in the department on a quarterly basis, we need to on an annual basis, we need to undertake a verification of assets and report. So again, with the implementation of logging system and the appointment of this official to assist us with this, and then we think that we are going to be able to address this. I've spoken to the issue of ICT. To ensure that there's confidence in the military veterans database with the implementation of the integrated database management and also the improvement in terms of or investment in terms of the ICT infrastructure overall in the department. I think it's going to also help us to eliminate this particular finding. We have committed there is a budget for ICT and it's been monitored through the ICT steering committee. Then the issue of policies I've spoken to, pension policy has been finalized. The other policies have been approved. And I know that DG has spoken to this earlier on in the opening to say that the minister has requested that we present as the policies to the ministry. At some point there will be a session where we present some of these policies to the executive authority. Then the issue of compliance, we used to have a compliance officer in the department. I think he retired early last year. That position was advertised. So I think with him now or her being on board again, the department should be able now to be assisted in this area. But we know that, for example, with also
3 minutes left.
Okay, with all the issues that have been raised. With the department not by military veterans, for example, in the appeals board of the department not complying or with provision of benefits, we want to put a system chair and members, which is going to help us assist monitor all these cases that come to the department. That will ensure that the department complies. And then I've spoken to the issue of portfolio of evidence, where we are looking at investment in the performance management system. Then I think, Chair, those are the two presentations that the department would like to table to the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you've been able to do your presentation within the time allocated. We appreciate that. That leaves us with enough time to discuss your presentation. Colleagues, I think we have until 12 o'clock to do that. But if you want to go beyond that, of course, there's no problem. Can go beyond 12. I just want to save some bit of time for the minutes. All right, colleagues, the matters are on the table now. Matters DMV. Once again, please let me take down the names of the colleagues who want to talk on the issue. Can I go? Right. Who's number one?
Nkhon. Shalem.
Shalembe.
And Ronald Bolo, Chair.
And the number three? Mochapo.
Mtembo.
Who's that?
Alice.
Number three?
Honorable Alice.
Oh, Alice Mtembo.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, Verasi. I got your name, Verasi. All right. And the next?
Basogu.
Thank you so much. Any other?
Just myself, sir.
Is that Mr. Murray? Okay. Okay. So I'll start with you, Mr. Shalembe, followed by Mutle, by Mtembu, by Dr. Basopu, and by Mr. Murray. All right, in that order, please, Mr. Shalembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, Chairperson, the main concern in the department, you know, is the accessibility the military veterans, to access, their benefits in the department. So, but I've heard that, he's saying there are sort of mitigations in place to ensure that, the accessibility is made easier for the military veterans. He's mentioned the issue of decentralizing the offices, for military veterans, to provinces. The question that I have, Chairperson, is when can we see those, provincial offices fully functioning? Because, Chairperson, I don't want that we come, when they come back in the next time, they come and say the same thing that we are decentralizing, the services to provinces. And I believe, there are provinces that has not been attended to, because according to the information that I have, we have 9 provinces, but 2 of the 9 provinces do not have those services. I'm just checking now, when can we see these offices fully functional in terms of, facilities in those offices, with the people who's got the capacity and skill to do the job accordingly? Chairperson, I'm worried about the issue of the vacancies, because time and again, the problem in the DMV is the issue of, say, vacancies has not been filled. And I don't know until when we'll be talking about that. Since, 2019 to now, we are talking about any vacancies in the department. I don't understand why the chairperson, I'm checking now the issue of, I mean, the office, the asset register. Are those, I mean, asset when it comes to that compliance? Are we talking about the movable asset? If so, I would be happy if it's possible to know what are those assets, or they are non-movable. And Chairperson, the issue of, I mean, the presidential task team is still a concern to me. I don't know how can they convince us, because I'm seeing myself serving in this committee as a failure, because now the job was taken, I mean, to the, now they are saying things are getting better. You know, it's like now they were doing it deliberately not to meet the target, because now if it's now about the presidential task team, things are happening. I'm not happy at all with that chairperson. And then the enforcement of the consequence management. Chairperson, I mean, there is an issue, it may be old, but it's worrying me because I'm not getting, I mean, the update on it. There was an issue of, I mean, the skills audit in the department. And that skills audit, I mean, there were people, I mean, who were implicated they were doing, the job was not done, but some officials within the department had to action the payment without, I mean, the skills audit being completed. I would appreciate, Chairperson, why we are saying now we need, I mean, to talk about skills development in the department. But now, what is the latest on that one? Is it been taken away from those outstanding issues when it comes to the consequence management? I'll appreciate, I mean, that Chairperson, if it can be clarified. And the vacancy on the audit committee, Chairperson, I don't know when did they say to it that, I mean, and what did they do? Or they just waited for the AG to tell them this is wrong. Why? I mean, they kept quiet until the AG comes in, because that is clear in an audit committee, something is very, very important. I'm concerned. But thank you very much on the issue of the advisory council that is in place now, because I complained about it. But although it has taken, I mean, 2 years to get it done, but at least it is done. Thank you very much for that. So far, thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mutle.
Thank you once more, Chair, and good morning to colleagues in the platform. Chair, mine will be one around the benefits that must go directly to the beneficiaries, which are military veterans, particularly around two beneficiaries, which has always been a problematic, education beneficiary and housing. Previously the department has been reducing the target or key performance, I don't know how to put it exactly, the target of services or the units to be delivered. It has been decreasing year in and year out. What does that mean to them? Because clearly the need out there for these houses is still in demand by the beneficiaries who are the military veterans. But over the years, that particular number has been decreasing. What is the rationale behind that? Secondly, as they have indicated on the and put a figure for the education benefits, Can they expatiate on it, how they go about it, particularly the differentiation between those that are still in your normal schooling system, like your primary high school, compared to those that are in the higher institution of learning, taking into consideration that they have a memorandum of understanding or agreement with NSFAS, how are they ensuring that students of that should be covered by the military veteran education benefits, who are then which is administered under NSFAS, is done efficiently and effectively and without subjecting those students into the processes that all students are subjected to that are funded by NSFAS. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Velasi?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to you and all members of the committee. Let me also join the queue in welcoming the presentation. Chair, I know that the department is doing its level best to make sure that they get a green audit. And my question is for understanding. I did notice that they are planning to appoint 3 auditors to assist a unit. I just want to understand that maybe it's a bulk of work that led them to appoint 3 auditors. As I said, Chair, my question is for understanding, because we all want to see the department get a clean audit at the end of the day. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mbelase. Dr. Pasoko.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And honorable members, DM and the department. Also, in welcoming the report, Chair, I've got only 2 comments to make. The first one is around the concerns that was raised by DG to say perhaps as a committee we can say we take note of that. But again, advising the department that it must find a way going forward to put its house into order. Because we can't afford a situation where the right hand doesn't know what is happening on the left hand. Then the last point, Chair, is around the presentation which says the department does not have a direct link with the DDM projects. Perhaps the question is, besides that, Chair, just to check whether are there any relations between each department and municipalities in terms of the implementation of these projects that are presented in front of us. I'm raising this, Chair and honorable members, because our understanding as a committee that these projects, for that matter, are being implemented in a particular municipality at a ward level. And therefore, it's by law, Chair, that these projects are supposed to find the expressions in the IDPs of the municipalities. Also, Chair, the municipalities have got a role to play in that they are supposed to provide the services, your water, roads, electricity, etc. So there is no way that a department can operate in that space without taking Omasipala on board. I just want to check on that, Chair. Also, Chair, here, we are being told that there is a challenge of non-availability of land. In most cases, the land belongs to municipalities. Again, which force you as a department to work very closely with municipalities and to a certain extent, even with traditional leaders, in order to ensure that this issue of the land is being addressed. I am saying, Chair, therefore, even if they don't have a direct link with the TDM projects, but however, in terms of the legislation, they are supposed to work very closely with municipalities for the implementation of these projects that we are talking about. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mare.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. I want to come back to, we know what the Act provides for in terms of benefits to all military veterans, obviously those that are registered. Has the department done a calculation to show us exactly what the monetary requirement will be to pay pensions to military veterans? And on each of the others, housing, education, medical, etc. My assessment is that the current budget do not provide nearly enough money to cover the needs of the military veterans. And I think we have said it in the past that military veterans must be treated with much more respect and dignity than I think what they are currently experiencing. On the pension specifically, and we get on a regular basis, on a daily and weekly basis, inquiries of people who are convinced that they qualify in terms of the Act, but we know that pensions have not been finalized yet. And if it has not been finalized, what will the effect be on the budget? And do they have confirmation that those monies will be made available? Specifically on the housing, I want to also ask in terms of what is allowed for that. And then specifically the response in terms of repairs, bond repayments, and new housing. We know that new housing will be via the Department of Human Settlements down to the provincial and municipal level. But what is the policy currently in terms of bond repayments and the requirements in that regard? And then also in terms of repairs on houses, specifically where there's still asbestos houses and asbestos roofs and stuff like that. Then I want to ask in terms of where they look at the assistance of military veterans who are themselves disabled or has got disabled dependents. Are that catered for under education, or is there a welfare side to this as well? And what are the conditions and the provisions in that regard? Then I also want to ask about the reaction time. Currently, we know that everybody wants immediate response, but that is not obviously realistic. We have seen at one stage an improvement in the reaction time to register veterans on the database, but now it seems like it's degrading again. And then the next one is what we so often get inquiries on. They apply, for instance, for medical benefits, but then they wait months and months and months for confirmation in that regard. My assumption sometimes is the delay is based on the available money, because the moment that you say, yes, you qualify and you are approved for benefits, then they will go for that service and it will be a cost to the department. To what extent does these things play into reality? And if you have got not enough money for everybody, on what basis do you decide who gets approval or who gets the benefit or assistance and who does not get the assistance? because somehow we have to make new plans going forward into the medium term. And if pensions comes into play specifically, then we know we're talking about big money. So if you can just respond in those cases as well, because the one thing that we want to see is dignity and respect to those who have been, under the military, who have served our country in the past. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have exhausted the list, unless there's another hand that I might not have seen. Can I confirm that we have exhausted the list of speakers? I think it's confirmed. There's no objection to it. All right. Colleagues, thank you very much for those questions and comments. I now turn to the department for their responses. I don't know who starts.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members for the questions and the comments and the inputs. As a department, we are here to ensure that we provide the necessary information to the members. I think there's a couple of areas that our presenter can come in terms of the questions, especially on housing. I'll ask Mr. Siango to start and deal with the questions that are related to his area, and then I'll go on with the other officials. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members.
Thank you, Gigi. Good morning again, Chair and members. The issue of vacancies, maybe let me start there, Chair. Unfortunately, Chair, in the Department of Military Veterans, we really have a high turnaround, or people come and go, in the department, especially at senior management level. So it's really a challenge, as I indicated, that I think in the past, I've only been here since 2019, and we've had two director legal services in that space, and this the latest one resigning within 3 months of appointment. And I think it also happens also in other spaces. I know even in HR also the person there stayed for less than 6 months, and in certain areas. However, with that being said, Chair, I think with the new director HR, he has really put in, I think with also with the DG, they've indicated that I think we need as a team to start doing some team building sessions so that we begin to understand each other in the department, we begin to improve how we relate to each other in the department, because it really becomes a problem when people come and go. But however, on those areas then where vacancies have been there for a long time, I think we have put a project plan, as I indicated, to ensure that those two and also those two DDGs and those two chief directors and I think and also one other director are put in place before as soon as possible. I'm sure by the end of this calendar year, we'll probably have those people in place. And then around provincial offices fully functional. Currently, there's only two that have not yet been secured. That is being Limpopo and Gauteng. We've just recently secured KZN. But with that being said, what we've also seen is happening in the provincial offices is that we want now to, I think in the past, when we assessed, I think sometime last year, the offices, we picked up that it's really offices that have not been fully equipped to function as officers. So now, what we have done now is that we have installed or with through our ICT infrastructure improvement program, put in place a high-speed Wi-Fi networks in those offices, and I know that some are still being dispersed. I know two have already been put in place. Whilst we are still waiting, because I think the best model for those offices is to actually have office points around the offices, like the normal kind of plug into computers, so that even when military veterans visit those offices, that they are able to access the internet. I think sometime also last year we were able, I think in most offices, the existing offices, to put adequate furniture. And we then also appointed administrative officers in all 9 provinces to assist those provincial coordinators that are there at the moment. So it's work in progress in terms of improving those offices. Then when I talk to the issue of housing, the issue of repairs, it's not in the policy of the department as we speak. So in that aspect, we will rely on the Department of Human Settlements and through their contract with the contractors in terms of repairs for those damaged houses. And especially we do not have a policy that talks to even the issue of repairs of, as indicated by the member of the asbestos, or I think if I had incorrectly. What we do in terms of our policy, we provide for a new build house, which is the limit. It's 108,000 as we speak, but I saw a circular that was coming from the Department of Human Settlements, that had adjustments. I'm not sure how, but as we speak now, the one that I know of is 188,000 in terms of the newly built house. And then for the bond repayments, we rescue a bond, we pay up to 190,000 to a military veteran for a bond that is in distress. And a military veteran must be able then to provide proof that the bond is in distress, and we verify that proof. That is your bond statements, your income, and all those kinds of things. So we verify that information. And also I think part of what we are trying to do now, or part of the assessment that we have done as part of the amendment of the bill, is to realize some of the policy gaps, that restrict us to provide comprehensive, human settlements for military veterans. For example, I mean, when I speak of a military veteran who has a site where he prefers the house to be built, the policy as it is now does not allow for us to go and build in those areas. We normally build in areas where land has already been identified by municipality or by Department of Human Settlements. So we'll probably move then those military veterans to those areas where there's no basically support or things like that. So I think those are some of the policy improvements that we need to do as a department just to ensure that we support military veterans comprehensively. And then the issue of a calculation in terms of the pension. Yes, we have done that calculation in terms of how much it's going to cost to deliver the pension, and we've got also, it's not a straight line calculation. We've provided kind of a different scenarios in terms of whether there is 10%, 25% uptake, or 50% uptake, or 100% uptake. There are those scenarios over a period, I think, of 5 years. that basically there are basically scenarios that will indicate how much it's going to cost the country to deliver on the military veterans pension. And also, Chair, the issue of then how much it's going to cost for the comprehensive benefits of military veterans, that work, we have reserved that work, Chair, as part of the amendment of the bill. Because part of the requirement for the bill to go through is that we must cost, how much is it going to cost government to implement the bill. So that's going to be forming, the costing of the bill is going to be forming part of that exercise. And I think when that time comes, we should be able then to indicate how much then comprehensively would the Department of Military Veterans require to deliver all the services. It's something that we are working on. I think National Treasury through the Government Technical Advisory Center is willing to help us in that regard. I think, DG, those are the questions then that in my environment I'll be able to answer.
Maybe before I allow you to move off this benefits item, I think the questions are very specific on the benefits. It's the cost per unit, be it in terms of education, at least you have explained the housing one, and also pension. I will not let you off on this one until you have dealt with that, because it has a direct implications on the budget.
You mean cost per unit in terms of each benefit?
In terms of each benefit. Like, for instance, let's take a pension. You said it's not a straight line. You said but you're not telling us how much you deliver per unit.
Okay. Then per unit, the proposal that was endorsed in the presidential task team for the 2022-23 financial year, it's 4,962 per veteran. And that money is also linked to the adjustments that are normally done by the Minister of Finance when the Minister of Finance does the kind of old age pension grant adjustments sometime, you know, during the budget adjustments. So that is for the pension.
So in other words, it's a monthly grant of
4,962
rand.
Yes,
adjustable every year.
Yes, Chair.
As per the announcement by the Minister.
As per the determination by the Minister of Finance, yes, Chair.
Okay, that's fine. And then for education, there was that you need to differentiate between basic and tertiary.
Chair, for the understanding, for tertiary, Chair, the threshold as we speak is I think the maximum is 88,000. I think colleagues will correct me if I missed that. It's 88,000. And then for basic, it's 35,000.
And then there was a question as to how this relates to NSFAS, because some of the people that you deem as your clients are already within the NSFAS catchment. How then do we deal with that one?
Chairperson, sorry for interrupting. I brought in Pumeza, the director that deals exactly with the thresholds for the education. And through you, Chairperson, may I allow Pumeza to give all the details and the numbers, Chairperson, as per the request of the members?
Pumeza?
Pumeza on board?
Yes, DJ, I'm on board. Good afternoon, members, and good afternoon to the DM and my colleagues.
What is your resignation, Ms. Zuguda?
My name is Phumeza Zuguda. I'm currently acting as Director, Education.
Okay.
Currently, we have about 2,940 learners at basic education, that is grade R up to grade 12. And 2,940 learners, they are from grade R to grade 12.
Right.
And some are actually, it's matric rewrites.
Right.
And currently, we are paying a 20,000 rands per learner. We are currently finalizing a review of the current threshold that we have, which is 20,000. We're reviewing it to between 30,000 and 35,000. A letter of concurrence was written to National Treasury so that it could be reviewed at that level. We've cited a number of instances where, because initially the school fees was at 42,500 and it was reviewed to 20. And since the 20,000 was actually promulgated, we have not increased it. And with inflation and school expenses going up on an annual basis, the department felt that it has to be reviewed. We're hoping that it will be finalized within this month, and then we will then implement the 30,000 at basic, which is grade R to grade 7, which is 30,000, and at grade 8 to grade 12, which is the high school phase of basic education, to 35,000. At tertiary, we've got 590 students who are both in private and public institutions. It's both military veterans themselves as well as dependents. 39% of these are in private institutions and 61% are in public universities and TVETs. In private, the 39% we pay it internally as a department, and the 61% is paid via NSF. They were sending MOU with NSFAS. We are battling just like any other that is dependent on NSFAS in terms of payments of tuition fees and allowances of all students. When I took over, I realized that there's some students that were not paid for a number of years. A letter was written to NSFAS so that we could have a meeting for the multi-year debts that we have not that have not been paid to the DMV funded students. We're waiting for a date to sign. They are actually currently, the last time I spoke to them, they said they are doing a reconciliation of the years that are cited in the letter, because some are dating back to 2018, 2019. So they, based on the approval list, they are reconciling so that when we sit as both NSFAS and the department, we could all agree on that. There was a question on special needs, learners with special needs support. The department is supporting learners with special needs, even adults with special needs with education support. Currently, we've got about 35 students that, or learners that are with special needs that are paid for by the department. We pay them above the threshold that is set. We've got some who are autistic, some who have Down syndrome, some with like with different learning special needs, learning disabilities. It depends on each student's ability or disability. Then the school fees would vary between 30,000 to the highest one is about 313 of an autistic learner. We pay fully, but that it takes the accounting officer to approve on an annual basis that we have to pay above the threshold, which is done annually, and then we pay. And then we've got, I think, about between 5 and 10 students who are with special needs, but most of them, it's not mental or intelligent special needs. It's others visual impairment, and others are like you know, they are quadruples, or so we then assist them. Each student would then come in with the special equipment that they would need in order for them to study for the duration of their course. And then we, on top of the tuition fee that we pay, we then assist them to get the equipment that they use. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Just before you step off, I'm trying to follow up on those that are at tertiary, the 590, the adults, the military veterans themselves. Are they in the mainstream program, or they're doing special programs? I'm looking at the age. I mean, if you were a military veteran from 1994, it's 28 years now, and I was not thinking those people would still be at school. Sorry, would still be studying, not at school, would still be studying at tertiary. What type of programs roughly are they doing at varsity? I'm talking about the military veterans themselves.
The military veterans.
Sorry. The two. on this one, it's the previously you were insisting on unabridged certificate to prove, that there are dependents. Are you still insisting on that? Because that was, a way of sifting out people who were just riding on the scheme, when in actual fact they were not dependents. They were not dependents to the military veterans. So those are the two as a follow-up on this one before we, unless there's a follow-up from other colleagues, so that we move off this one nicely, we close it nicely.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. We've got most of military veterans who are under education support at tertiary. They are in formal education streams. I've got a 59-year-old who's currently doing LLB through UNISA. So they are adult, but they realize that they need to go back to school. So it's formal education. It's not special. Certain special, it's just that some of them are they are slightly disabled, therefore they need special care in terms of their education.
Okay. And then on the
unabridged birth certificate in 2018, the department realized, okay, previously before 2018, the department realized that a lot of learners and the students who are being supported are either nieces, nephews, and grandchildren, or as stepchildren, who then in turn block the system for people who are actually in need of support. And the decision was made in January that we should actually request for an unabridged birth certificate that in it actually reflects both a parent and both parents, a mother and a father, whichever is a military veteran. We've started this then, even now we are still insisting on that. In the instances where a military veteran is deceased, we normally request there are some who deceased and we're maintaining via a maintenance order from the court. We then request that so that we have a legitimate document that proves that this is a child of a military veteran. In other instances, I think because it's there's some children who are born out of wedlock and the military veteran doesn't want to declare them, some even bring in a paternity test which proves that the child is a military veteran, and we then assist in those instances. And there are instances where a military veteran passed and there was no maintenance order, there was no unabridged birth certificate or paternity test, and the mother of the children is known to the family. We then request either an uncle or an aunt, or whom are siblings to the deceased, to write a letter or prove that there was they know this child, so that we are able to assist in this instance, because there are instances where they can't, because when you apply at Home Affairs, if the father is deceased, and when the child was registered, the birth was registered, he was not included, they are unable to print the unabridged. So we then request the family to actually assist us in those instances.
Okay. Do you apply the means test?
Currently, we do not apply the means test. The department tried when we were consulting the policy, and many military veterans were against the means test. So it currently we're not applying the means test.
Okay. You may continue and deal with other questions.
All right. I think I've dealt with all the questions that were raised, unless there's follow-up questions, Chair.
No, it's fine. Let's move on. Mr. Siango, you were still dealing with that.
Yes, thanks. The issue of the schemes audit, Chair, and the consequence there, it's part of the consequence management that is currently happening, Chair. So that, I think that at some point we'll probably, when that process is done, will be reported then to the portfolio committee. And then the DTM issue, we have been in consultation with the presidential task team and also with the executive authority around a mechanism on how we can interface as a department with provinces and also with municipalities. For now, there is a proposal that is in place which is being consulted, which talks to a mechanism, a protocol agreement that needs to be developed, that talks to exactly how the department needs to interface with those structures or with those with provinces and municipalities. So we are working on something, and it's still in consultation phase. I'm sure when then the time is right, when our executive authority is satisfied with the content and we've structured it, and then we should be able to make it visible in terms of how then we are going to implement that. But for now, we've also been advised that we need to also use our principals, because they participate in some of these structures, to assist the department to get into some of these to interface with the necessary kind of structures at provincial level and municipal level. And then the issue of the PTT, maybe that's my last input on this issue, on the questions. We acknowledge, Chair, that the department had weaknesses and challenges. I think hence then the PTT was put in place. I think it's not a matter to say that we as a department are giving away responsibility of running the department. The PTT was meant as an intervention to the department to
Recording in progress.
I needed to respond to. Thank you.
Okay, there are about three questions that remain unanswered. On consequential management, they touch on skills audit, and then the second one on the audit committee vacancies, and the third one on the three auditors that you are appointing. Who's dealing with those?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure I'm still having Ms. Gasamba on the line due to the load shedding. Colleagues keep on coming off. Zintle, Gasamba, Ms. Gasamba, are you in?
Yes, I am in. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson and members. I'll be taking the question that that relates to asset management. I think the question was mainly around whether are these intangible assets, are they movable, immovable? The issues that were raised in the AG report mainly relates to the movable assets. And in most cases, as you know, that we have minor assets, which relates to assets that are below a 5,000, and major assets, which talks to assets above a 5,000. So we had instances in the past wherein assets could not be found on the registers, but at a very minimal level. So what we have done, in fact, that's what informed us to get the service provider on board in the previous financial year, even though we did not necessarily maybe achieve attain the desired outcome. However, we have intensified the processes of verifying assets specifically for the 2021-22. We're using the internal resources where we built an asset management team that went and verified assets twice during the financial year, which is even more than what is required in the policy, because in terms of the policy, and which is based really on the current human capacity, we are only obliged to do e-asset verification once. But for the previous financial year, we did it twice to just make sure that we do not have any loose ends. So we are hoping to really clear all of those queries relating to assets, while we acknowledge that there are challenges within asset management. However, they are manageable. Thank you.
Thank you. On consequence management.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In terms of consequence management in the department, the current processes are still unfolding. We have not finalized the cases yet. We have indicated to the Labor Relations Unit the fact that time is not on our side. We need to ensure that the necessary processes are finalized so we can be able to hear the verdict of the colleagues. I'm speaking to the four suspensions that were that happened last year within the department. In relation of the consequence management with the audit findings, we have done that as well. We've sent them to the different branches, and Labor Relations is also setting up those disciplinary processes so that we don't have repeated findings. In terms of the status, I think that's the area that we have not touched, Chairperson and the members, the status of our internal audit and external audit. Our internal audit status, Chairperson, is currently sitting with three posts, with two that are filled. And of course, currently we know that the director is acting as a CFO. We listened to the concerns about the conflict of interest that was raised, and we still awaiting that we can be having another person deployed to act. The position is not vacant, Chairperson. The position is still held by the employee that is on suspension. And currently, we also have some mitigating factors in case a person who's got the necessary finance skills comes, we can be able to release the acting CFO, but she will not be going back to her position. There is what is called in government the cooling period, whereby he can be placed to another branch until this financial year is over and she can be able to go back. Currently, the position is still filled and it will be an acting person that will come in. In relation to additional people that must come to the internal audit section, currently the structure does not allow for us to advertise for more positions. We are looking at the new organogram that is going to be able to accommodate us, but the department, through our current acting internal audit official, he did a benchmarking with other smaller departments that are related to ours, and we see a scenario whereby there are four people in that, and sometimes in other departments there are five people in that section. We will be able to ensure that in the new organogram we benchmark and balance the internal audit. In relation to external audit term has expired on the 30th of April. We sent through the submission to try and see whether we can be able to have their terms renewed. We could not get their terms renewed. And the current scenario is that the department is currently advertising in five positions in order to ensure that our external audit committee is in place as well. Safe to say, indeed, we have inaugurated the advisory committee. We are trying to ensure that all these statutory institutions that are supporting the department are properly in place. We will also soon be looking into the appeals board. I think my colleagues have touched on that one. Chairperson, I think from our side, in terms of the questions that were raised, we tried to provide the necessary responses.
Yes,
I think we tried. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members.
I'm very satisfied with the way you have dealt with all the questions. Colleagues, I think we have come to the end of this session, and this day is a question that cannot wait. I would accept that question. Remember, we still have an in-year monitoring of the budget. Any burning question that you want to pose before I release the department? DG, before it has been brought to my attention, but I'm not raising this as an issue for today, that Section 3C of the Act states that in the event a military veteran or a category of military veterans being considered for possible non-contributory aid by a state, such military veteran or category of military veterans must be subjected to a means test to determine their eligibility. I'm just packing that and saying there is a law. Maybe you would consider this issue when you amend your legislation. Ms. Tsukuza said when this issue was raised with the military veterans, they said they we're not happy with it. I mean, I'm talking about the mains test. But obviously, you can't ignore what is in the law currently stands. So otherwise, anything you do will be found to be irregular. So just tie that one up, because it may put you in a collision course with the AG and our system point. But you can attend to it via the amendment to the law. All right, colleagues, as it were, I think we can then extend this issue down. Is it the right thing to do, colleagues? Any objection to that? All right. Okay. DM, the colleagues don't have any further question. I think I now hand over to you to wrap up the discussion before I excuse you and the team. Over to you, dear.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members of the committee.
And thank you to the officials of the department for the information shared around the plans of the department for this financial year. From the ministry side, Chair, what we can say is that the plans that were shared with the oversight committee will be implemented, but even as we are implementing the plans, we'll work on them as well to improve them, because you'll appreciate that there are areas where the plans are not sufficient or are not adequately assisting to indicate what should happen. An example is, for instance, around the education support to the military veterans community and their dependents, and the MOUs that we have with agencies of government in rolling out that support, and the policy that is involved in relation to that support. We will improve the plans, we'll further work on the plans, because there are still issues there that are not sufficiently, you know, finalized and concluded. As you have just picked up the point about what the department at the moment is reporting to be doing around the means test in relation to education, and of course the means test in relation to all of the other benefits. Now, there is a point, Chair, that we must also make, that the presidential task team was expected by the president that it will improve and unlock the performance of the department, and that is to be realized through the collaboration of the department with the provincial governments we have, and also to see to what extent the provincial governments can bring the local government tier, the municipalities, into this delivery to military veterans. With that work done, with respect to the solutions that we will devise together with the provinces, the plans are expected to change with respect to, you know, the targets that we have projected for ourselves, if indeed there will be improvement in a number of these areas. So it is plans that we are going to implement, but it is plans that we are also going to work on. With respect to an audit picture of the department, as honorable members would have noted, the status of key focus areas legend that has been shared with the committee earlier on, that that legend gives you a very, we believe, objective assessment of how the department is performing, and as members could see for themselves that we are still faced with a lot of work in a number of areas for things to improve. It appears that everything still remains almost the same as far as that legend is concerned. There is a challenge for us to make sure that there are improvements. There are matters which members are concerned about, detailed issues like, for instance, do we have in our budget the finances to pay for the benefits that are being mentioned, for instance, the pensions benefit, do we have that money in our budget in this financial year? Do we have in our budget money for, instance, to get military veterans to access free public transport? Those issues we will return to the committee to clarify about what the situation is. The pension is concluded in terms of you know, work around it, policy and administrative machinery that we need to roll it out. An announcement would be made to that effect and what exactly the amount is going to be. The issues around you know, health services to military veterans and their dependents, it's information we will bring back later, because the PTT has committed itself to roll out health support to all military veterans and their dependents. But that, of course, means there should be an intervention to make sure that it happens. And discussions and preparations for that with the Department of Defense Health Services need to be embarked upon to see if that population increase will be managed comfortably by our hospitals in the military, and also to see how that is going to be assisted by collaboration with the provinces. All of those plans are matters which in the course of the year will come back to the committee about. Chair, let me pause right there. The department's work has realized the areas of improvement, which gives us also the feeling that some challenges are being overcome, much as there is still much more work to be done. Thank you very much, Chair, and to the committee members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. We appreciate the marked improvement in the way the department is dealing with the issues. However, of course, there are these outstanding matters that are receiving attention, but we would happy, and if all these matters are resolved as quickly as possible. Issues such as the ones you have just highlighted, DM, the issue of organogram, finalizing the organogram, the issue of people who are on suspension, we need to have that finalized, because it may create some instability in the department. And the issue of finalizing the remaining policies. So with that, colleagues, I think we can end the discussion with the department on that note, and thank them for participating in this discussion this morning. And we DM we and the SOD, I think you are then free to exit the meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, DM, and thanks to the colleagues.
Can you then quickly move to the next item, colleagues, and the minutes? Brian, we have 4 or 5 sets of minutes.
That's correct, sir.
Can you start with the first one? Right, this is the first set of minutes. We're dealing with the... wait a minute. This was a closed meeting.
That's correct, sir. Yes, yeah. It was.
So I guess the minutes are safe to be handled in a public meeting, Brian. It's safe to do that today in a public open meeting.
So ideally, you'll remember I had raised the issue, preferably would have wished to, for them to be considered in the follow-up closed meeting, but I'm not so sure whether that will materialize in time for the adoption.
Yes, no, let's remove the minutes because they were transacted in a closed meeting. We'll deal with them in a, we'll try to close the meeting and then deal with those. Can you move to the other side? Right, this was the briefing by the AG on Tusano and the status of records review. And we also received an update from the department on Operation Tucson and activities, and we adopted the minutes. So these were the attendance, colleagues. Just run the whole page of attendance. All right, we dealt with attendance is page 1. Colleagues, are there any corrections? Oh, that was page 2. Page 3, Brian, are there any corrections? Page 3, page 4, Brian, are there any corrections? That was page 4. Page 5, any corrections? Page 6, are there any corrections? Page 7, any corrections? Go right up until the end of this of the minutes. All right, colleagues, this is the third of the minutes of the 16th of March 2022. Is there any mover and the seconder?
Seconded, Chair.
Moved by.
Oh, I'm moving for the adoption. I thought you were looking for a seconder.
Yes, Tabu moves. Seconder?
I second.
Shilembe seconds. Thank you very much, colleagues. Can you move to the second set? The minutes are then adopted. Can you move to the second set? Minutes of the 22nd of March. It's a briefing by DOD regarding progress on their engagement with Treasury on the budget cuts, irregular expenditures, and the funding of an exit mechanism. And we also adopted the minutes, and there was a briefing from our team. All right, so this is the attendance. Mr. Pasop is I nearly said Bishop, is doctor, eh? Right?
Correct. Correct.
Thanks so much. Okay, so this is the attendance. Okay, so the page 2 continues. Any correction? Okay, move, Brian. Move, Brian. Till the end of the page, Brian. Oh, I don't know. There's no page division here. When I'm on page 5. All right. Goes right up to the next page. Colleagues, are there any corrections? All right. Right at the end of the page of the minutes. Colleagues, if there are no corrections to be effected, do we accept the minutes? If yes, can I get the mover and the seconder?
I so move, sir.
Mr. Mareh moves and the seconder.
Mafanya
seconds. Thank you so much. Mr. Mafanya, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you so much. Good. Can I get another set? So minutes of the 20th of 2020 April. So we're considering our program for the term and the briefing by the minister on the heparin medicine task team. And of course, we took the presentation from our own advisors and the content research. And the minutes, okay. Again, the same correction there, Dr. Pasop. Then anyway, these are the minutes. Thank you. All right. These are the, and the initials of Mr. Kaba, please correct them. Let's hope I'm VC, yeah? All right, and then the second page of the minutes. Right, go down. And that's the third page, we're on the on page 3 of the minutes. And the corrections. And let's go to the next page. Page 4 of the minutes, it's the last page. Colleagues, I present these minutes. Do I have support? If yes, can I get a mover and a seconder?
I move the adoption, sir.
Dr. Pasopo moves for adoption, seconded.
Mutapa second.
Thank you very much. The minutes are adopted. And let's go to the last set, Brian. Is this the last set, Brian?
That's correct, sir. Right.
Thank you very much. And colleagues, this was the attendance. We're dealing with the DOD budget and plan and their responses to AG's status of records review. And we also took the presentation from AMSCO on their budget and plan and their responses to the AG's status of records review. And we considered the minutes. All right, so these are the things. Sorry, the record of attendance. Go to the next page, page 1, if there are any corrections, colleagues. Page 2. Right, go to page 3. Page 3, Brian. Page 4, Brian. Page 5. page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. And page 10. Thank you. Right. Colleagues, I present the minutes. Looking for support. Is there any objection to that? If none, can I get a mover and a seconder?
Chair, I move for adoption.
Ms. Mutapo.
Mutembo.
Thanks, Velase. Mutembo moves. And the seconder?
I second, sir.
Mr. Murray seconds. Brian, was this the last set?
That's correct, sir.
Yeah. Brian, you really appreciate the diligence with which you approach the minutes.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Please, thank you very much for that. They're always, up to, they're always fine. All right, let me just thank you, Brian, and thank the team that supports the committee, both Dr. Van Rensburg and Daniel Daniels, for the good work that today we've finalized our discussion on the budget. When do we receive the report on this? Because we must present it. When and when do you present it to Parliament? Daniels, do you want to assist?
Good day, members. Good day, Chair. Chair, on the latest Monday lunch, the report will be available to members.
For adoption on Wednesday, isn't it?
I will just check with Brian whether we do it on Monday and on Wednesday, Chair.
That is correct, Chair. We were adopting on Wednesday.
We'll still be in time. And the debate is on that other week, on the 24th?
I'm not sure about the exact date of the debate, Chair, but then we will be on time if we can adopt by Wednesday.
Okay. I think it's on the 24th, Brian, that other week. It's the first day of that other week, yeah. All right, colleagues, here we are. I think we have come to the end. Let me thank all of you for a good meeting. And the meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Recording stopped.